Marky Worthington podcast all day.
All day.
Dream by night.
Don't buy me a drink. Just give me $10.
Oh, dude, you look sweet. Yeah, you got a big beard, dude.
Go down to the strip club with your floppy disk and turn it into a hard drive.
Yeah, right.
Trying out by Big Tony.
We're here to name names and make people feel more ashamed for shit that they're not proud of.
Me and my best friend, Marky Worthington.
No, whatever it is.
Hey, how you doing? Welcome to the Marky Worthington Comedy Podcast. This is episode 111. It's a callback episode to part one of the Rosh Yeoman episodes. I listened back to this one before putting this one out, and it really did take me back to the time that it was recorded. This one was recorded on the 19th of November 2019 at the basement, and it was released on the 2nd of December 2019. So it was a really good episode to listen back to. Like, Ross at the time was fairly new in the scene, and we mentioned that in the episode. And in hindsight, I was fairly new as well. As much as I thought that I was a lot more established at the time, it was good to listen back to it. Probably my favorite part of this episode, little side note, is when I diagnosed myself as a narcissist on my own podcast while I was listening to myself do that on my own podcast. So that was a good experience. It went full circle. But yeah, enjoy this episode, and cheers for tuning in.
Callback episode.
Callback episode.
A good callback.
Callback.
Hello and welcome to the Marky Worthington Comedy Podcast. This is episode 7. We're recording this at the basement before the basement open mic. It's on the third Tuesday of every month, so come on down to check that out. As I mentioned, I'm your host, Marky Worthington, and we've got a guest on the show today, Rosh Yeoman. How you doing, man?
Good, mate. It's an absolute honor. I'm pretty stoked that you actually agreed to have me on, because I'm the absolute greenhorn that knows fucking nothing.
Yeah, well, that's why it's good to have you on, man. We like to cover off everybody in the scene, and we've had a couple of the more established comedians. We had Bill Make, and we had another guy that's been in there for about as long as me, with Dylan Holmes. But you've only been in the scene for a short amount of time. How long have you been doing comedy for in Canberra?
Yeah, so it's been 4 months. I had a period, I do contracting work, so I was unemployed for a couple of weeks, and I've always wanted to do it, and I was like, well, I'm not going to sit around just drinking beers all day. Three or 4 months, so I'll fluctuate between completely self-deprecating to pretending like I actually know what I'm talking about. My first ever open mic,
yep,
was back when the Phoenix was still
yeah,
kicking.
I,
yeah, it was a gong show, so you got 60 seconds of leeway, and then if four people held up a gong sign, you were out.
Yeah, right.
Sort of thing.
How'd you go?
Well, I went and I saw the first half, and I've heard comics say, like, going to open mics is sometimes an inspiration to go up, because I think anyone, you know, I've heard other people on the show say this, is sorry to sound repetitive, but anyone doing stand-up comedy has been wanting to do it for a while, you know, before they go up.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone scripts their first bit on the bus on the way to their open mic, you know. And so I had a couple of things in my head, but I had no idea of how I wanted to thread them together or anything, and I didn't know it was a gong show. But I said, like, there were some outright duds in the first half, and then I went and spoke to the MC, and I was like, oh, can I go up? And he was like, yeah, yeah, for sure. But then I went and had a couple of tequilas to take the edge off, and I got up there, and, you know, it's a noisy pub. Like, most of the people weren't there to see the comedy. Audio wasn't great, and I launched into just rough topics like religion, and you've seen my stuff.
Yeah,
And I didn't get gonged, but in the end I dragged myself. I was like, I think I'm out. You know, I reckon I'm probably wearing this out, so I'll step down now. And then it was probably 2 years after that I actually sort of did my next open mic, and then since then I've done like everyone I can find on the calendar.
Yeah,
you know, in Canberra.
Yeah, no, it's good, man. This definitely shows how keen you are. I know that. I don't think I've every mic I've been to, how you've been at, and if you weren't at, you told me that you weren't going to be there. Like, you're literally at everyone that you can go to, which is good. It's good when you're like first starting to jump into it with both feet. You mentioned before, it was 2 years between your first one and then when you jumped into it. And I've done that. I've met people like that before. They sort of come along, they do the first few, and then they come back later. There's a couple in the scene like that. Believe it or not, Nick Shuler took like a 12-month gap.
He's good.
Yeah. And so he's first, when he first started doing comedy, you can see him in the comment section now correcting me if I'm wrong, but first big thing he did was Raws, was the Raw finals. Or the Raw comedy series. And man, he said that like that was too much for like a greenhorn, just like off the bat to be in such a fairly high pressure situation.
Yeah.
So he took 12 months off after that, and now he's come back and he's picking it up real quick.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like I think one of the things, like, so just being so new to the scene, like, it's I think every like it's this weird to me, a balance between ego and humility. Like, I think you have to have a certain level of either ego or insecurity or both, and a little bit of confidence to actually get up and do it.
Yeah.
But then you got to have the humility to realize where you're at, what you don't know, and, you know, you had this idea in your head about how it was going to go, and these, you know, jokes that you'd been, you know, tinkling away in the back of your mind for 2 years or whatever. And then when you get up and, you know, one of them just outright bombs and you eat shit, you realize, you know, I've got to actually, you know, put a lot more work into this and that kind of thing. And I think, like, I think because I wasn't working at the time, it gave me something to focus really heavily on. and if I didn't have that period, you know, I might not have done it. And I think back to, like, when I did that open mic, the gong show thing, I wasn't ready. Like, I really hadn't written it out properly, you know, and I don't think I was in the right headspace either. And so sort of like coming into it now and going, no, I'm going to dive in and do this, like, with, you know, grab everyone I can kind of thing. The closest analogy I can think of in terms of my life is I started skateboarding when I was like maybe 12 and ditched like sport. I used to play soccer, basketball, that kind of thing. And when you start skateboarding, like, you know, and I ran a skate camp with some like kids teaching them and stuff through a skate store and everything. I used to say to them that like skating was more like learning a musical instrument than playing a sport. Like when you start playing basketball, you know how to run and throw and catch,
you know.
But when you get on a skateboard, like, you're moving horizontally, you're balancing with your knees and your ankles. Like, it's a completely different ball game, and you're just not prepared for it. And and then when I started doing stand up, it was about 2 months in. I realized like some of the similarities, because I remember when I first started skating, you get a couple of tricks down, you know, like I can ollie up and down gutters, I can ollie down some stairs or whatever it might be. And you know, you watch the pros, you know, you watch the video parts of the, you know, the best skaters at the time or whatever else to jazz
CKY and shit.
You're watching the bonus
scenes on the Jackass DVDs.
Yeah. Well, I never really went with Jackass, because to me, Bam Margera was like, he was like in skateboarding, you don't make it if you're not good. And to me, Bam Margera was like the Britney Spears of skateboarding.
Yeah.
You know, like, he didn't have the talent that proper pro skaters had, and he was making money out of it. And that pissed me off, because it was like, this is different to the music scene. There's no Justin Bieber's in the skating world, you know?
Yeah.
But no, so I got to that point where I was like, you know, fairly confident with doing basic tricks. And then I remember thinking, well, there's this rail at the Civic Skate Park. So now all I've got to do is ollie and turn the board 90 degree angle and I can get on the rail and now I can start skating rails.
Hmm.
And you go and try it and you're like, no, you fucking can't. Like, you have so much to learn and so much to get to that point. You know what I mean? And that crystallized for me so much when I saw Kai Fei's hour show for the second time.
Yep.
And he crushed it both times. I saw him out at Boardwalk and then at the Civic Pub. And I was actually talking to him about it afterwards. And by that stage, I think I had like 15 3-minute bits.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I could do 45.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was like that skating thing where it was like, oh, I've just got to turn the board and then I can do it. And it's like, and then I saw his show and I saw how well polished it was and how much more goes into it and everything else. And it was just like a slap in the face of that humility against the ego of just going, fuck, I have so much to learn. Like, yeah, I mean, did you have that when you first started out? Did you think, oh, I'm gonna crush it, and then sort of have to come back down to earth and go, all right, I got to work this out?
Man, the first few times I did okay. Like the first time, I didn't go great, but for my first time, I was happy with it. Yeah, second time, I spoke about it with the Kai Fei episode of my first walkout. But that was just because there was the joke was too gross for the audience member and their partner. So I didn't have a problem with that. I kind of went pretty good for the first like fair few times.
Yeah.
But dude, the first time I remember bombing and I didn't bomb the whole set. What happened was it started off okay and then it started to die off a little bit and it was at Phoenix.
Yeah.
Same problem, you know, just wasn't my night. And man, it hits you hard and you kind of, a lot of people you'll see in the scene, they'll bomb and they'll leave straight after, but man, I will stick around and just stew in it. Like I'll sit there and watch I'll watch all the other comedians perform and do well
and just go home
just swearing at my windscreen the whole way listening back, because the thing is my phone auto connects through the Bluetooth in my car.
Yeah, okay.
And when I record my set, especially if I bombed, I just close my phone and just walk off the stage.
Yeah.
So like what will happen is like I'll hop in my car, the Bluetooth will auto connect and just automatically start playing my set back to me.
No,
yeah. So while I'm driving home thinking of it and the Bluetooth's still connecting, I'll get out of the car park and then all of a sudden you'll just hear the recording kick in. So I'll just instantly have to listen to my set back again.
Yeah.
And because, man, I get this thing once I'm driving, like if my phone's not in the cradle, I don't get my phone out of my pocket until I get home. I don't care what happens. I don't want to get in trouble. Yeah, so I have to just drive along and listen to, because like I've got too much of an ego to just turn it off. Like I'm like, well, I've started it now, so I'll just be driving along, thinking about my set, listening to my set, and I swear like part of being like a narcissist is just that you think that people actually care. Like you think that people realize you're listening to your own voice at the lights while you pull up next to them and talking to yourself.
Okay,
but really they probably don't know what you're doing. They don't care what you're doing. But in my mind, I reckon that there's a lot of crazy people that think I'm absolutely crazy because I'm driving along and listening to my set as I drive home talking about my set to myself. So that was the first, that's what happens, man. Like the first time I bombed, and I bombed a couple times since, but I've recently, I think, so you're saying you get to that point where you know a couple of tricks, you're happy with it, like you start to put it together and you get it. Recently at Boardwalk, I don't know if you're there for the last one. You were there.
Yeah.
At the last one,
you recovered.
I recovered. Unreal.
That was awesome. Yeah.
So I just addressed the fact that it wasn't going well, and made the audience realize that I'm just one of them. Like I'm just a person as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of gave me some more leeway, because all of a sudden I wasn't like this person that was there to entertain them. I was just one of them, which I was telling them a story instead of just, you know, it kind of, I didn't feel disengaged from them after that. And that's what broke the ice.
Yeah, I remember that. And like, you crushed it with the Ferrari analogy. I love that bit. and to me, it comes back to that confidence, ego, humility balance. Like, you need to be confident on stage. It's like people can smell weakness. This is the Canberra scene. Like, it's not like we're in Boston where it's like you go up there, you stutter, you're done. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Get off the stage, kid.
Yeah. but I think there's also and this is more just based off like the comedians that I've sort of like grown up sort of idolizing and listening to over and over and over, and like just watching their timing and stuff like that. Like, you know, someone like Ricky Gervais will punch down to the crowd,
but
he's doing it as a bit.
Yeah.
And eventually he still makes himself the butt of the joke sort of thing. You know, like, no one wants, like, you need to have a certain level of confidence, I think. And then, you know, but no one wants to see someone get up there and be like, hey, I'm the fucking balls, like, you know, get a load of how good I am. Like, I don't think that works. And like, you know, in Canberra, like, I've seen other comics where they play up the introverted angle and it's funny.
Like,
do you know what I mean? It is relatable, and you know, there's sort of a beguiling aspect to it where it's like, you know, obviously I've had to have the confidence to come up here and do this, but I'm going to act very meek.
This is where the confidence ends. Like me getting on the stage was like, I'm running on empty now. I used my last bit of confidence. Dylan Holmes is good at that, at the bringing that to the stage, like when he's just and Scott Hawkins has some stuff like that, you know, like it's just what they bring to the stage is that personality. There's others that have like the like a different type of stage presence. Back to Nick Shuler, we were saying, I think this came up in a previous episode, that I was talking about, how different comedians address hecklers or people talking loud in the audience. Because that's different to me. I define it differently as like a heckler versus someone who's just being disruptive.
Someone who's rude, not engaged.
It's like, actually, I find a different approach. Like, a heckler can sometimes usually be directly talking to you, whereas like someone that's just being disruptive might just be talking to the person next to them really loud and not listening to your set.
Yeah, well, I see that. Yeah, it's interesting because I think when you start doing stand-up, it's not like you start telling everyone, right? Because you're like, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't want my mates coming along, seeing me eat shit and that kind of thing. But I've been fucking begging for a heckler, and I haven't had one. And I remember for Kai's thing, there was this one lady in the crowd that was just constantly making it about herself. And it was like, this is his hour. Mm. Like, you know, he's got family in the crowd. Like, he's put so much work into this. And I was fuming. Like, I was across the table from her. I wanted to say to her, like, can you just shut the fuck up? Let him do his thing. And she wasn't heckling him. She was just being that rude, obnoxious person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
One of my go-tos with that is like, just as a premise, would be like, say this person can't actually like stand that someone else is having the attention, so they need to have it to themselves. And that's just where, like, it's weird, isn't it? It's weird how people have these like disorders where they just need the attention. Well, let's be honest, that's why we're doing comedy.
I was just about to say that.
But when someone else is in the audience and they don't want to do comedy, but they don't want you to have the attention, it's like sort of, it's a weird trait for personality.
Yeah, and particularly like when you're going to see, like, if you paid good money to go see a comedian that maybe
$10 is good money.
I mean, in comedy,
that's like, if I was selling a show for $10 a ticket, I'd say that's my like that would be my like comedy hour.
Yeah, yeah. And you have an onus, like 15, you know. Yeah. but you have an onus there, and so I've kind of just doing the open mics. I've had this luxury where it's been, I don't know these people anything. Like, yeah, you know, it's an open mic, and like, you know, like you, I remember the story that you told about the walkout and stuff like that. You know, that amazes me that people would walk out on that material, considering some of the shit that I've said.
Yeah.
You know, and it sort of confuses me. As far as I'm concerned, like, if you've walked into an open mic for free, and you have no idea whether it's going to be veterans like Kai or, you know, someone like me that's greenhorn, you know, just giving it a crack or whatever it is. As far as I'm concerned, like, you, like, A, don't heckle, because my response is you're either too much of a pussy to get up here yourself.
Yep.
Or you're going to get up here yourself, and so you know how hard this is, and you're still heckling. So, like, either way, I have no time for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I've lost my train of thought, but yeah, I've totally lost my train of thought. We might have to edit that bit out.
See, the bit that I don't get about another, like, the under, I guess, people don't really talk about this type of heckler much, but it's more common than what you'd think. The type of heckler that I've seen a fair bit of is the one that didn't like a bit of your material.
Yeah.
Especially at an open mic, because it's pretty fast turnaround between comedians. Yeah, yeah. The weirdest type of heckle I've seen for that is I didn't like your last joke, so I'm going to just ignore you and talk really loud for the rest of your set until the next comedian gets up.
Yeah.
Instead of just, or pick something later on in your set to like yell out about. And a lot of the time you'll find out that it wasn't the joke that they yelled out about. It was one a few jokes before,
but
it took them too long to think about it. So now they had to like find something wrong with the current joke because you've already moved on.
Yeah. And like, you know, you hear the big comedians talk about this, where it's like, you know, you can do jokes about, you know, the whole spectrum, and then as soon as it comes to the thing that they care about, you've crossed the line.
Yeah.
And now it's not a joke, it's a statement. It's like, well, fuck off. Like, it's not how it works. Like, everything you're saying, like, comes from a kernel of truth, but, you know, you're not trying to be misogynistic or sexist or homophobic or whatever it might be. Like, you know, I mean, it probably comes through pretty clearly in my stuff that I'm not exactly pro-Catholic, you know, but I'm not up here to make a political point. Like, I'm just trying to make a group of random people that walked in for free laugh, you know, and that's all it is. And so, yeah, I mean, like, I haven't had a heckler, but I've been really itching to have one.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to see how I'd respond and how it would go. I think the closest it's come was, I won't say the venue, but it was the place that we lost and then ended up going to the White Rabbit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you were there that night, and I was, like, 12th up. And, like, guys were doing material that was gold.
Yeah,
you know, like, I was like, shit, I have to follow these guys.
You have those nights, eh? Like, where you're just like, everyone's done well.
Yeah, everyone was killing it, you know, and no one in the crowd was laughing. Like, no one got a joke. Like no one got a laugh. And I was like, what is going on? And I think I might have spoken to you, or I spoke to a couple of people behind the curtain, and I was like, what's going on with this crowd? Like, you know, I don't understand. Like, you know, and fine, if you go to an open mic, someone's not funny, don't laugh.
Yeah.
You know, you're not obliged to cater to this random dude's ego.
Yeah, you got the rest of their set not to laugh. Exactly. And then you got someone else.
Yeah. Shit. But it was like, I remember when I went out, I'd asked particularly about this table of girls that were sitting at the very front. And by the time I went out there, like, people up the back of the room, like, they had their arms crossed and everything else.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
it's that whole thing about, like, if you've done something a couple of times and it's bombing, it's shit and you need to ditch it or refine it or whatever it might be.
Yep.
But you can have bad crowds
yeah.
where they're just disengaged or they're rambunctious and not paying attention, whatever it is, you know, that kind of thing. And you just deal with it and accommodate with it. But because I was like second last on, I was like, well, I'm just going to go after him. You know what I mean? Like, I've got nothing to lose here. No one's laughing at anything. And I've just heard 11 comics go up and do great stuff, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And it was just a dud room.
I tell you what, because I remember the night you're talking about, I think some of what had to do with that was actually the fact that some people in the front weren't necessarily, I don't think they were there for comedy or their friend, they were there with their friend or whatever.
Yeah.
And what can actually happen is if the rest of the crowd see someone else not having fun, they start not enjoying it, because what happens is it's like a subliminal thing where like laughter's infectious but so's not laughing.
Yeah.
And if somebody looks like they're not having fun, some of the weaker crowd members that can't think for himself go, that person's not laughing, so I'm not going to laugh. Or I'll spend my time fixated to see what makes that person laugh.
And yeah, nothing's doing it, yeah.
You see it all the time with couples, man, like people coming in.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Couples,
the boyfriend that doesn't want to laugh because his girlfriend's not having a good time. And
yeah, or like, you know, it could be something like to avoid an argument, I'm not going to laugh at that joke because I don't want to be asked why I thought it was funny.
Yeah, or you're on a Tinder date and you're like on eggshells to begin with, and like if someone's yeah. coming out with some super un-piece of shit.
Man, I reckon that's a good icebreaker. Take your Tinder date to an open mic and see what they laugh at, like what they find funny.
Well, I mean, this is something I've always had this chat with my mates. Like, it's so common to hear guys say, like, oh, I like a girl with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And there's two ways you can take that. And often I think that, you know, when guys say, oh, I like a girl with a sense of humor, what they're really saying is, I like a girl that laughs at my jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want a girl that makes me laugh.
True.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I want a funny girl. And so I think you're totally right. Like, first date, come to an open mic. I'm not going to go up because, you know, it's a first date or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
yeah
take it to an open mic. And if she's, like, that staunch and bitchy or whatever, it's like, yeah, okay, I think we've found where we're at.
Yeah. You don't want to get up if it's the first date.
Oh, fuck no.
Because you don't want to just be like, you know, oh, so anyway, I was on this Tinder date, like, while you're on stage. Like,
yeah. And, well, yeah, I mean, on a first date, it's not like you can get up and go, so my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So
I'm banging this broad.
Yeah. I mean, I was having this threesome, right?
And
my mate, Brad.
Who's also the result of a threesome. Shout out Bradley Bishop.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, man. No, well, that's a good little intro to you and the scene, man. We'll wrap it up with that one and have you back for another the second part of the episode.
Yeah,
we'll
just in the next one.
Kick it on. So yeah, there's an intro to our first greenhorn to the scene, and thanks for listening so far, and make sure you tune in to the next episode for the second part of the Ross Yeoman episode. Cheers, and make sure you like, subscribe, and share for more content. Thank
Five
you.
Stars.
Don't buy me a drink.
Just name names.
Right.
Big time.
Fucking throw out a strip club with your floppy disk.
Yeah, you got a big beer, dude.
Shame for shit
all day.
Me and my best friend, Marky Worthington.
Keep it simple. Count your money.
That they're not proud of.
Just give me $10.
All right.
Click.
Did you hang up?
No, I just said click.